welcome to the bike show with me, Jack Thurston. Now, Klaus Bondam is something of a hero around these parts. He's the former deputy mayor for cycling in the city of Copenhagen in Denmark, and he's now the director of the Danish Cyclists Federation. Before he became a politician, he was an actor, and amazingly enough, he appeared in the film Festen, the modern classic and just about the only Danish film I've ever seen. Anyway, Klaus was in London the other month to give the keynote speech at the Hackney Cycling Conference. I persuaded him to travel to the conference by way of a rolling interview, not with me, but with Buffalo Bill Chidley, former bike messenger and regular contributor to the bike show. Bill began by asking Klaus about his current work as a cycling advocate in Denmark.
Working with cycling in Denmark is advocacy in a different way than working with cycling or advocating for improving a bicycle infrastructure is here in the UK. In Denmark, there is a total modal share on a national level of 20%. So 20% of all transport work is made on bicycles. In the city of Copenhagen, which next to Amsterdam and other Dutch cities are probably the most cycling cities in the world, the newest numbers are 41% of all study places and workplaces are reached by bike every single day of the year. So also on with heavy October storms, December snow, chilly spring mornings, it is really an integrated part of our mobility culture in Denmark. So in that sense, I wouldn't say it's easy advocacy, but it's always a matter of sort of bringing it to the next level. And the next level for us is to work much more with integrated transport systems, the ability to take your bike along the regional trains, park and ride facilities in the outskirts of the cities with good bicycle facilities, so you can actually change your mode of transport if you come from a further distance. Because we know that people who cycle on a daily basis, they're in a better physical shape. Sadly enough, 20 people die every year in bicycle accidents in Denmark, but compared to this, 4,000 people dies out of inactivity. And I have no idea what the numbers are here, but they're probably a bit higher because you are a much bigger population. So my point is, it's a good, healthy investment for a society to invest in bicycle infrastructure. All European countries these years, and I know the UK also, fights obesity problems. We have problems with noise pollution right here where we're sitting. I mean, we're just passing by, but imagine people living close to this. And it really affects your health, how sort of the level of noise. Air pollution, which I know is an issue in London also affect our health. As long as we can increase the mobility by moving private cars away from the roads, we actually also help on the sort of growth financial agenda in the sense that those services and those products that needs to be delivered around actually can get around easier. Also provoking, mind-provoking, is that in a European context, we're talking about cities that are 1,000 years old. There's been an enormous development, and probably too much development, in the car infrastructure and the car dominance in our cities over the last 30, 40 years. So we're basically, I mean, we're at the verge now of letting a development the last 40 years determine the future of our cities. Is that right? I don't think so. I mean, I think we have to work on how we think the mobility should be in a city. We've done that as human beings before. I mean, we've went down the wrong track and sort of adjusted ourselves, and we have learned how to change our behavior in certain situations. And I think we are in the same discussion with mobility at the moment. 15 years ago, we were smoking everywhere inside where we could. We don't do that any longer. We've changed our attitudes towards the LGBT community, women's rights. I mean, all these things. So things are changing. And I think that's a great thing about human being, that we have this ability to change.
Well, that was kind of a global tour d'horizon, the place of the bicycle in society. After that, I think it's only appropriate that we take a bike.
Yes.
We have to go and hire a bike for Klaus so that he can get to Hackney, and on the way we're going to take a look through Klaus's eyes at the roads of London and the provision for cyclists. Let's do it.
Yeah, and I'm very happy to have you as a local along, because as you know, in mainland Europe, we drive in the other side of the road. So it's quite a challenge for me, but I just returned from Adelaide, where they also do it the other way around.
Do they have a similar system in Copenhagen or not?
I mean, in Denmark, it's probably the worst place in the world where you can run a bike share system, because so many Danes have their own bicycle, especially in Copenhagen. Yeah. But we just introduced what I believe is part of the new generations of bike share system, which is an electric bike share system. It's called Go Bike. And the Danes are not really like the Dutch taking up the e-bike. In the Netherlands at the moment, 30% of all new sold bikes are e-bikes. One out of 10 households has an e-bike today in the Netherlands. It's not at all like that in Denmark. But I actually think that the e-bike really sort of holds some very promising aspects for the bicycle mobility, because suddenly you can get people who are not so used to cycle to actually cycle. You can have people cycling longer distances. And if you've not tried an e-bike, and I mean, you're a very dedicated cyclist yourself, so am I, so we may think that, oh, isn't that a bit sort of cheating? you shouldn't do it that way. But I mean, it is really an extremely comfortable way of cycling, because it's like cycling with a strong tailwind sort of coming into your back and sort of just pushing you forward, and even the biggest hills, they're just like, no problem, just do that. I think it's very sad if cyclist advocates sort of talk bad about the e-bike, because I think the e-bike has some advantages there. You don't agree with me, I can see.
No, I not that I disagree, it's just when you were saying that cyclists generally poo-poo the e-bikes, I'm one of those cyclists who I always think of it as a solution looking for a problem. But now that I've heard you speak about the advantages of it, no, I can see that it's... Because it's about... I guess it's about making cycling more accessible.
Exactly. And I mean, if you have been a car driver for years and years and years, you're maybe a bit overweight, you're in your late 40s, and you're really not sort of physical kind of person, I mean, then I think it does have some really good advantages. And we do, there's a lot of municipalities in Denmark that do investments with this by borrowing e-bikes to people to sort of have it for a test period for 3 months, mapping out their change in transport behavior. Because, I mean, all this is about mobility culture. All this is about mobility culture, changing your mindset, changing your habits.
Klaus, we have to get going, otherwise I'm going to be in big trouble with Hackney cyclists.
The bike's off the road.
The quarry is off the road.
No, you said get bikes off the road.
Oh my God. Why? Yeah. I mean, it was some craftsman in a lorry that sort of shouted bikes off the road, but the funny thing is that actually the more bikes there is, actually would help them to get there. Services much quicker around.
Yeah.
But I mean, maybe they prefer to sit in their lorry instead of actually being out there working, making money.
Welcome to London, Klaus.
I've lived here, so I do know something about your city.
Get bikes off the road. Yeah. And now we're approaching the main east-west cycle lane in Bloomsbury on Tavistock Place, and we're going to turn left towards Hackney, turn east towards Hackney.
Yeah. It's fine, it's a segregated bicycle lane, but it is, what do you call it? So the two ways come in two directions. I mean, which is okay if there are few cyclists, but the more you increase the number of cyclists, I mean, this will get really messy.
Yeah.
Because you simply have too many cyclists driving too close to each other in opposite directions.
We're going to turn left here.
Okay.
So that this gets really, I mean, this line gets really, really busy.
I mean, I used to live here like 20 years ago, and what I found extremely good and positive about London and Paris and a lot of other European cities is that you see the number of cyclists increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing. And in that sense, it's really great. But boroughs and the city government has to understand that the more cyclists you get, the more you need to invest in and increased bicycle infrastructure. I mean, you can put as many helmets you want on people, on lycra vests in strange colours, but what really gives safety is build infrastructure. I mean, and when I talk about build infrastructure, I'm not talking about a bucket of green paint or white paint. There is this tendency among some cyclists just to be sort of really overly excited and happy with some paint on the street. I mean, it's just paint. Didn't cost them much. So one has to advocate for real bicycle infrastructure, segregated lanes, routes through the city in car-free environment, well-maintained, as you can see here. It's completely non-maintained.
I should mention, we're just riding up the side of the British Library north on one of Camden Council's premier cycling routes, and we're heading for the most controversial and heralded scheme on Royal College Street.
But here again we have a not-so-wide bicycle lane with bi-directional cyclists coming. Fine when there are nobody, but if you have, like in Copenhagen, where you have a modal share of 41% of all workplaces and study places reached by bicycle, I mean, this does not work.
This route is fairly typical of the quiet ways concept, where you direct cycle traffic away from main routes onto quiet back streets.
Which I probably think is is a good solution for London to do like that. And London, in that sense, is an old European city, which has this sort of extremely strong grit of small roads here and there and everywhere going through the city.
We're just about to ride onto Royal College Street, which has the planters up. It has a separated cycle lane.
No, it's not a separated cycle lane. This is just some flower boxes in the middle of the road and some pretty dangerous, I don't know the words for it, but they...
Armadillos.
Yeah, armadillos, yeah. Which are actually very unsafe as a cyclist if you sort of hit them, and they can make you make quite terrible crashes. I mean, now we enter a real segregated bicycle lane with a kerb.
Right by the bus stop, that's why the kerb's there.
And it finishes after a few metres. That's life. But I mean, it's nice with some green things. So it's, in my eyes, it's just a semi-segregated. We have this tendency as cyclists to be happy with a little bit of paint, some flower boxes. But, I mean, they've spent millions and billions on car infrastructure. We're just asking for a small amount of those money to be used for build infrastructure for people who are just as normal, everyday citizens, taxpayers, who just happens to ride a bike.
Okay, we're going to turn right now off Royal College Street and head back towards Hackney. It was a bit of a diversion.
Yeah.
But I thought the diversion was worth it just to get your views on the Royal College Street bike lane.
It's important for me not to be rude or not to be criticising. Right. Uh-oh. Attacked. Two cars parked on a bicycle lane. I mean, that's a job for the police.
There are two police.
Yeah, but then they should find him or find the car there. I mean, it's very important to get your police on your side. This is not a parking space. This is a bicycle track. And the police has to be your allies in that sense. And writing out fines, I don't know if that's their authority here. But at least somebody should write out a fine for people who park illegally.
So you were saying, Klaus, that you got your driver's license when you were 36. So you were basically cycling everywhere.
The Danish cycling culture is like that. Cars are extremely expensive in Denmark. Don't make me talk while we're riding up that hill there.
Of course not.
No. Cars in Denmark are taxed with 180%. So we will find a lot of people who actually start a professional career, get families, get kids, get a personal mobility habit that is car-free. But it's very important for me to say I'm not sort of an anti-car person. I'm on an average day. I'm a car driver. I'm a user of public transport. I'm a pedestrian. And I'm a cyclist. I mean, I am all for, and I always advocate for not creating war between the different modes of transport. And you may have different needs. So we're just going straight forward. But the funny thing is that if you start asking people, could they maybe change something in their mobility habits, in their mobility patterns, and what needs to be done to make them change that, you will often find that it is not so much that it actually takes. And mostly you will find that it takes safety measures. People will not cycle if they do not feel safe. Yeah. End of story.
Let's keep over to the... We're trying to keep over to the left in this painted lane.
Yeah. Yes.
And it's actually a really beautiful day, isn't it?
Yes, it's a wonderful day. It's absolutely a wonderful day. And I mean, London is such a nice cycling city because it's pretty flat. It has this wonderful grid of small streets. It's not a high-rise city, so there's a lot of light and air.
Okay, so this is a fairly common experience in London. We've got a bus right behind us.
Yeah. No, but I mean, I think we go at a speed, which is should be okay for the bus. I mean, how much do we drive? 10 miles per hour. I mean, I think it's a fair speed for the bus. I mean, one should not get stressed by a bus behind you. And again, the bus companies, the bus drivers should actually be happy for the cyclist, because the less congested there is with private cars, the easier for them it is to get through on time to create a safe and comfortable ride for their passengers, getting them from A to B in time. And I mean, I think it's quite appalling that somebody actually shouted at us before, get rid of the cyclists. Imagine if each of these cyclists were in a car instead. Imagine that. I mean, the traffic would be even more congested. So you should be happy for the bikes on the street. You should appreciate the contribution that they're doing to a more sustainable future. They're doing good for public health. They're doing good for mobility. They're doing good for reducing air and noise pollution. I mean, they're doing a lot of good things. I think it's important that human modes of transport take back the cities. These cars were not here 30, 40 years ago, not in this enormous amount as there is today. Cars are excellent for bringing around goods. Cars are excellent for longer distances. Cars are very excellent in rural areas where it's not a sound financial investment to invest in bicycle infrastructure or public transport. But in the city and urban areas and suburban areas, in environments that are as flat as London, bicycle is an absolutely fantastic invention.
So the rush hour is in full swing, and we've moved away from a segregated bike lane onto a painted lane. I'm going to take Klaus down to Old Street. A friendly London taxi driver just giving some comments on our riding style.
Why? What did he say? Oh, we're not supposed to drive two and two.
We are actually allowed, but it's not commonly known. It's seen
no, I mean,
as
there's
it
no
is.
Need for him to shout, because there's plenty of space here. There's plenty of space here, and there's room for all of us. And again, taxi drivers should be our friends in the sense that they are cars that are used quite intensively. It's so funny to see it's the car drivers who are aggressive, who are shouting at us, who are angry. I mean, they must have a terrible life being so angry and being so frustrated. I don't get it.
And stopping at the red light, as I always do.
Yeah, that's good. So do I. I'm entitled, because of my job, to stick to the law. No, but having said that, I think it's very important to, I say, transporting yourself around in the community, I think it's very important to obey by the rules, because if you do sort of, if you're against the rules, join an organisation that works for changing those rules, but don't be an anarchist and change them yourself. I mean, that does not do cycling any good. What did you say?
A pedestrian just shouted, "Bikes suck."
Why? And I simply don't get it.
We're just coming up to Old Street Roundabout, which is not the most dangerous junction in London, but one of. So yeah. I'm just going to let you ride. I want you to follow me through the junction.
Okay, cool.
If you're not there?
If I'm not there, I mean, you know that something terrible happened with me.
Nothing bad's going to happen. Old Street Roundabout.
Okay, it's okay. I mean, I'm an experienced cyclist, so it's not a problem for me, but it's probably not the place where you feel the most safe if you're an unexperienced cyclist.
Would you let your 8-year-old child ride
no,
through?
No, ever. Never, ever. I'm not really sure whether I'd let a child out in the traffic in London or on the streets of London. But I would definitely, in some of the more quiet communities and neighbourhoods we've been through, I would definitely, if there was a safe route, if there were a lot of bums, if there were a lot of signage on awareness, I mean, I would create environment around schools where children from a certain age actually could cycle or walk to school safely. I think it's a human right for children to be safe. I think it's a human right for children to be able to transport themselves safe.
We're going to go straight on down Old Street, and we're in Hackney now proper.
Okay.
Just coming along the end of Old Street,
yes.
The eastern end of Old Street, into Hackney proper. And there's a lot more cyclists around, isn't there, Klaus?
Yeah, there's a lot more cyclists here. And of course, that also shows that if a borough, if city leadership invest in bicycle infrastructure, you create more cyclists. Because I mean, everybody who has tried cycling, be an experienced cyclist or a very unexperienced cyclist, after you've been up there on the saddle throttling your pedals for half an hour, I mean, you have a fresh, nice feeling, and it costs you much less than going to the gym. And you get to see your city, you get to see the people who are around you, you get smiley, flirtatious faces here and there.
Shouting bikes suck.
Yeah, but I mean, that's drivers, and I actually find that quite appalling. I mean, I don't do any harm to anyone by cycling. I mean, people shouldn't shout at me because I cycle. I mean, I'm a very civilized cyclist, so I find it extremely offensive, to be honest.
I think it was because we were cycling side by side, and
look, they're driving side by side. Why shouldn't I be allowed to cycle side by side? I don't get it.
Yeah,
And again, for this guy, who is a waste collector in a lorry, he can do his job much quicker because there are less private cars on the road. And that's good for society because we then save some money, which we can use on other things, on education, on welfare, on old people.
So we're just riding up Hackney Road.
Yes.
And this is a more sort of typical cycling experience in London.
Yeah. I mean,
There's no separation, there's no pain, there's no nothing.
I mean, which is okay if you're an experienced cyclist, but if you're a beginner, if you're a senior, it can be pretty challenging. The fun thing is that there's enough space here to make a real segregated bicycle lane. There's plenty of space here to do that. So, and it does take some investments. But these investments in infrastructure have been done ever since the beginning of dawn. I mean, this used to be a earth dirt track. Somebody 100 years ago decided, oh, there's this new thing, car. We better build some roads so it's more comfortable to ride in a car. The funny thing is that, I mean, now we have a new agenda, we have a new time, we have a new culture. I see a lot of cyclists this morning, and I see a lot of very civilized people who drive after the condition. A lot of them with helmets, a lot of them with neon vest. They do their contribution to safety and visibility. We've probably seen thousands of cyclists this morning. I've seen one, what I would refer to as an urban warrior, who sort of just going there. The rest of them, they drive after the condition. They're civilized people. Look over there. There are more cyclists than there are cars. There are more cyclists than there are passengers.
We're just by the Cat and Mutton Bridge on the top of Goldsmiths Row in Hackney.
So it's not a minority. It's about to become a majority.
And we're off. Hackney Council has done quite a lot of work to sort of remodel the streetscape here.
Yeah, but I mean, it's excellent work. It's good. One should never sort of be satisfied and say, oh, well, now we've done it. There's no more to do. There was always more to do. Cities and communities should be responsive to that. Oh, it's beautiful here. It's really beautiful.
We're in Broadway Market, yeah. Riding against the cycling rush hour.
Yeah, but I mean, we're in one of the world's big metropoles, London. You have this nice village feeling here, people having a good time, enjoying the sunshine, having a nice rest before they go to work for the day. What's great about cycling is that you get to see other people.
Yeah, we were riding up the London Fields bike lane, which is not, is really quite wide, isn't it?
It's okay, I mean, there is lots of space for both cyclists and pedestrians here, and we just need to respect each other and respect that one side is for cyclists and the other side is for pedestrians. I mean, there's room enough for all of us.
So we've reached the end of our journey to the Hackney Picture House, to the Hackney Cycling Conference. Klaus's bag is here.
You're on a Harry versus Larry bike?
Yeah, always. Always.
I'm a Dane.
It took us an hour to get here. Yeah, Martin reckons that he came on that big bike with your bag in 15 minutes.
That's good. I mean, that actually shows how efficient cycling is. I mean, quite a heavy suitcase that I have. So one should introduce the cargo bikes as forms of delivery much, much more, because, I mean, it really gets you quick around. And you're a young person, so you can do it.
Young? Oh, no. I wouldn't call myself young.
Young compared to us, Martin. Yeah.
Youngish.
Youngish. I just need to take a photo of your bike. Is that okay?
Sure. Yeah.
Can I have you next to it?
Klaus Bondam, director of the Danish Cyclist Federation, was riding with Bill Chidley. Shortly after the interview, I met up with Bill and another London cyclist and regular bike show contributor, Kieran Yates, to pick over what happened at the Hackney Cycling Conference.
We're sitting on the south bank outside the Hayward Gallery. I've just ridden a Boris bike, a cycle hire bike, across Waterloo Bridge, which I have to say is one of the great experiences in life. Let alone cycling, just in life in general. And we're here to pick over what happened at the Hackney Cycling Conference that you two both attended and live blogged while you were there. Bill, your take-home message was that there is a lot of pushback against the cycling revolution.
Yeah, and I think that's where the comment that caused so much fuss on Twitter from Gilligan, which was, stop whinging on Twitter and actually get out and do something, or words to that effect. That's where that comment comes from, because we're at the stage now where we've got a political mandate pretty clearly. You know, the LCC's campaign, Space for Cycling campaign, which involved emailing a bunch of candidates, came back with 60%, 50 to 60% support for space for cycling, and in some boroughs, like 100% support, like in Hackney. So we've got the political will. Now we need to support those schemes when it actually gets to the nitty-gritty of pushing them through possibly rebellious residents. And there was some talk about a candidate in Kingston, I think it was. Was it Kingston?
It was in Kingston, yeah, or the borough of Kingston. And they were stood as an independent councillor against the mini Holland plans that they have in Kingston, and Kingston did get selected in the end, but it shows that even when plans get accepted and adopted, there is still pushback from people in boroughs who don't want some aspects of their lives disrupting.
I mean, this happened in Brooklyn, didn't it, in New York, when they introduced a cycle lane that was along some boulevard or other, and there was a huge campaign against it, and all kind of letters in the New York Times, and a quite well mobilised campaign against it. And so I heard that argument being made by Andrew Gilligan at the Big Ride rally just before the local elections. Maybe we should hear Andrew Gilligan make the case about why there is pushback and what we need to do to counteract it.
We've taken the time to bring potential opponents on board, but some of these plans and others will still, I predict, cause a lot of opposition. We are taking away road space. We are taking away parking. We are taking away some bus lanes. And that is where we need you. The next 6 months are going to be a test of strength. We will see whether the forces for cycling are stronger than the forces against cycling. We are already seeing significant opposition building up some of our schemes. In Enfield, for instance, actually a candidate standing in the council elections in Palmer's Green next week specifically against our Mini Holland scheme, which is going to give £30 million to Enfield. But that's the kind of thing you've got to fight. You've got to get in there. You've got to fight the fights where they need to be fought. Not always City Hall. I mean, you can slag us off if you want. I don't mind. God knows, you know, I really don't mind. But basically, you've won the argument there. The place you've got to fight is on the ground, locally, in the boroughs, starting with the elections on Thursday, and I look forward to joining the fight with you. Thank you.
So that was Andrew Gilligan explaining the fact that it's not all plain sailing. It's not as simple as him and Boris Johnson making decisions about making London a better place for cycling and it then happening. That there are lots of ways in which it cannot happen.
One of the principal ways will be when it actually comes for the local councils to take the decisions. If they get a load of people in their ear saying, we absolutely don't want this, and no one from the cycling community becoming involved and saying, yes, actually, putting their hands up, yes, we do want this, then there is a possibility that some really great schemes will get voted down. Like, there is still the possibility for the Kingston scheme to get to run into local resistance. And John Dales, who did a separate presentation, was talking about, all right, perfect is great, but acceptable, you know, adequate is acceptable. And there is, you know, there is the need to bear in mind that the guys who are in power now, who are pro the cycling schemes, they may not be in power in 2 years' time. So we need to get these schemes through now whilst those people are in power. Like when Boris is in power now, maybe the next mayor won't be so pro-cycling. Maybe he won't, or she will not be quite as committed to putting in lanes. I mean, although that's not the case in London because there is a 10-year budget, but John Dales had a phrase about doing things on budget and within an electoral cycle, because I mean that's what's happened in Sevilla. I mean they talked about Sevilla. They've put in half a kilometre a week for 4 years, and they've now got X hundred kilometres of cycle lanes. That administration is gone. There was the example given of the Green Party in Brighton. They've done great things for cyclists in Brighton. They, more than likely, they will be gone, and the next administration will not be quite as pro-cycling. So we need to get in there now. As activists, we need to get in there now and support the schemes that are going in. And actually, I have to say that more than a few people spoke about how Gilligan seemed at the Hackney Cycling Conference. He seemed, to me, he seemed beaten. You know, his head was down, his body language was pretty poor. I don't know whether it was just him having a bad day or whether that was him feeling like he's getting it from both angles. You know, on the one hand, there's all these bloggers on tweeters giving him a hard time and accusing him of having blood on his hands and being just the acceptable public face of an anti-cycling administration, which is how some people characterise Johnson, the Johnson administration. And then also, when he goes back to TfL, and he is doing great work, and they are putting through some great schemes, when he goes back to TfL, he gets involved in all of these turf wars, all of this pushback from the buses, from the people that believe that smoothing traffic flow is the most important thing. So he's getting it from both angles, possibly that's a source of his ennui on that day.
Do you get that sense that Kieran, that he's embattled?
He certainly seemed that way. It had obviously been a difficult week for him that week. There'd been another death on the London transport network at Vauxhall, which obviously he will have to fend a lot of questions about that. But in a more general sense, I do pick up on a vibe from Transport for London that you do have different segments of the Transport for London body fighting for their own particular bit of ground, and cycling has to fight within that sphere as well, and people build up little empires in a large organisation like that, and they're all protecting their own little empires. Leon Daniels is supposed to be coordinating all this and producing a coherent policy, but I'm never entirely sure that there is a clear direction that is being pursued overall.
I mean, what do you have to play with? You've got the streets there, from the edge of one building to the edge of another building. You've got the place where people walk. You've got the place where people drive. You've got the place where buses have an exclusive right to go. In some places, you have a bit of painted cycle track. Very rarely do you have an absolutely segregated cycle track. I mean, was there anything that came out of the conference about how, as activists, we should be approaching that thing, which is ultimately is a zero-sum game, isn't it? Is it not a zero-sum game? I mean, a little bit of what Klaus was saying in the rolling interview with you, Bill, was that that we need to make the case that every person on a bike is the person who's not in a car, and that the bus drivers should be glad that people are on bikes because they're not in cars, therefore the buses can make it more easily through the traffic, and the absolutely essential journeys that can only be made by car can be made more efficiently and more quickly because people are getting around in a more efficient way on a bike.
The bus drivers should be not only happy that someone's on a bike because they won't be in a car, they should be happy that, you know, someone's on a bike, they won't be on their bus. Because, I mean, the projections are for a million more people in London within the next 10 years. And the transport system, roads, buses, tubes, trains, is already at capacity. So where are those extra million people going to go? They cannot go on the buses because the buses are at capacity. They definitely can't go on the roads. And they certainly can't go on the tubes because there is not enough room on the tube network for any more people. So it's obvious, and this, I'm sure, is the conclusion that TfL has come to, that they have to go on bikes, that extra million people.
But we know that if they are to go on bikes in any great number, they need to have their own space because otherwise people are not going to feel safe enough to cycle. I mean, that's what Klaus said. That's what all the research has found.
That was something that came up in Dr. Rachel Aldred's talk. She was talking about increasing diversity of cycling in London, and one of the factors that is apparent from her studies is that certainly for women in London, cycling increases away from heavily trafficked roads. So the more segregation or the more quiet routes and parkways available, the greater the increase in cycling for women. And she was saying too that although cycling is increasing in London, it's the young, generally male, who is increasing those numbers.
We heard Robert Goodwill, who's the national level minister at the Department of Transport, who's responsible for cycling, say at another conference, I think, you know, the problem with cycling in Britain is that it all looks like a race. It's all fast young men making it look like a race. You know, why would anyone want to ride a bike when it looks like that? You know, it should look like it does in Holland, all relaxed, chilled out, cycling along in a calm way. And he's completely seeing things in the wrong way, that in terms of cause and effect, that ultimately when you have roads like this, it is going to be only the people who are going to go fast in a confident way, as if it is a race. And it sometimes does feel like a race for your own safety on the roads. And if you don't make the roads pleasant, you're not going to get the relaxed cycling. It's not a matter of suddenly making cycling look really relaxed and then we'll have mass cycling.
Well, I think Klaus made the point in the interview, and numerous speakers during the conference made the same point in slightly different words, which is, at a certain point, you need, or we need, to make a decision about what kind of city we want to have. Do we want to have a civilized city where kids can cycle on the roads and people like myself and Klaus can ride side by side without getting abused by taxi drivers? That's at the core of what we're faced with, because at the moment, the London roads are really uncivilized, and it is like a race. And that's something that Klaus commented on as well. It's like, why is everybody rushing around everywhere in this kind of brutish, uncivilized way? You know, it's like a competition for space. And I mean, you're quite right to say that we have to take road space from somewhere, because Gilligan made exactly that point. We are going to take pavement space away. We are going to have to take bus space away. I mean, that's what's going to happen with the CS5 scheme. You know, the bus lane is going to go. You know, so it is about allocation of resources, and the resource that we're talking about is road space.
And that's a controversial issue in Hackney, isn't it? With one of the more voluble Hackney town councillors, Vincent Stops, who's a bus man, likes cycling, likes to see people cycling, but the bus is sacrosanct for Vincent.
It's not just the buses, it's pedestrians. He thinks the pedestrians should be at the heart of any strategy, and he views the segregated bicycle lane curbs as a barrier, which they are. They are a barrier. But Ferial de Mercy...
Who's Ferial de Mercy?
Ferial de Mercy is a Hackney councillor, actually a Hackney Council cabinet member with responsibility for transport. And she publicly said, I am here to say that Hackney is not anti-segregation. And afterwards she said, oh my God, I hope I don't get too much flack for that from within Hackney. So, you know... But I think that whole Hackney cycle lane thing is kind of overplayed, and I'm sort of tired of it, because Hackney just wants what everyone else wants, which is civilised roads. You know, if it works, they'll do it. If it doesn't work, I don't think there's an ideological objection to segregated cycle lanes. They just don't think that they're the best solution. And Brian Deegan's presentation is probably the way forward, I would think, for Hackney at least.
I've not lived in Hackney for a long time, but I cycled into Hackney to go to the conference. And what was noticeable to me was the number of kids who were cycling either through the park to get to school or coming along the canal paths to get to school. And I used to cycle through Victoria Park years ago every day of the week, and maybe you'd see two or three of the blokes coming through the park. So it's showing that Hackney is doing something right. And it's something that Klaus Bondam said as well, that in order to develop cycling, we've got to focus on education, particularly education of children, and developing safe routes to schools and creating a generational change in society. And that he had a really strong focus on that.
He said, I mean, I capitalised it, you have to think of the kids. You must think of the kids. For him, the most important thing is to focus on getting kids on bikes, because if you get kids on bikes, then you get adults on bikes. And he mentioned it in the interview. I mean, he didn't get a car until he was 36. So that's kind of I mean, you know, a person of his demographic here would definitely have a car. I mean, he was a senior politician within the idea that someone of his stature, I mean, you know, famous actor, someone of his stature would not have a car at all until he was 36. Quite incredible. I mean, I don't have a car. I'm way past 36, but I'm very much the exception. Very, very much the exception. I mean, our demographic, generally sort of white, middle class, even though I'm ashamed to describe myself as middle class, everyone tells me that I am. I mean, generally, guys our age and of our demographic have cars. Klaus didn't get one until he was 36. I mean, that's partly down to Danish tax on cars, but...
Yeah, well, I didn't have a
car until I had to leave London.
You're not a typical white male, Jack.
No, well, so they tell me. Let's talk about Brian Deegan, like John Dales. He's a transport planner, kind of guru type of guy.
He's a superstar of cycle design.
Yeah, he's a design man. He has some responsibility, I think, for these cycle street design manuals that get produced, which are quite critical documents because they define what you can and can't do, what engineers and contractors can and can't put into the schemes. And these are important documents, and Brian is someone who writes them.
Brian Deegan, I thought he was the star of the show this year. I mean, Brian, during that session, said that he'd seen, had sight of over 1,000 cycle schemes and been personally involved in designing 200. I mean, that's a lot of schemes. And from his presentation, I got the impression that he works very closely with Andrew Gilligan, because he showed us 12 slides and then put crosses through three of them to indicate the kind of scheme that Andrew Gilligan would not approve under any circumstances. And they were all on pavement lanes.
So shared use?
Not shared use necessarily. More
like a piece of paint on the pavement.
A piece of paint on the pavement where the cyclist is pushed up onto the pavement to the left. Like like the Vauxhall Cross scheme is now, where you have to move off the roadway and onto the pavement.
And what was his case against those?
Gilligan just doesn't like them. And I mean, I don't think Brian likes them either. I mean, Brian doesn't like any scheme where cyclists are forced to go around, because in his opinion, then and this will be your experience. If I see a straight line and someone puts a white line pointing me away and I can't see any reason not to go in a straight line, I will go in a straight line.
So this is desire lines, isn't it?
Desire lines, yeah, if you like. But I think Gilligan's objection to them is that, being a regular cyclist himself, he doesn't understand why he doesn't like them. He just knows that he wouldn't like them. Therefore, why would anybody else?
It always strikes me as strange that the car drivers get to go there directly and people who are going under their own bodily power, pedestrians and cyclists, have to go on these crazy roundabout routes.
Well, that's a Dutch principle, send the cars around. I mean, that's actually a Hackney principle.
So they're reversing what we do here typically.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
But anyway, back to Deegan. Deegan was very knowledgeable. He presented really, really well. I mean, he, as I say, was a star of the conference. Star of the conference, in my opinion, closely followed by John Dales.
I think just taking one of the points from that, he gave a list of different levels of segregation, didn't he? And of 14 degrees of segregation, yeah. And it comes back to John Dales' presentation again, in which he was saying you've got to be real about what can be achieved, and some things are more achievable than others. So if you can get some form of light segregation in now, go for that, and then perhaps in the future it will become more solidified.
As we were leaving, Ferial de Mercy said that some of the best schemes in Hackney have been trial schemes. Schemes that are only supposed to be for 6 months. So a light segregation scheme, which you can sell to the local residents as, well, it's not going to cost a lot, and we can always take it out afterwards, could turn out to be something that's there for years and years and years.
It's interesting because there are two lines of argument. There is the sort of pragmatic argument, which says, yeah, do what you can. It may be small, but, you know, you'll build on it incrementally. And then there's the argument, which I also kind of understand, that if you don't do a lot, then you don't actually create any changes in what's going on the ground. You don't create tyres on the ground, because it's just one little bit of cycle lane or cycle facility in the middle of nowhere. It's not part of a network.
Yeah, well, I don't think anybody's talking about just painting 50 metres of bike lane. Everyone's talking about a contiguous network.
Yeah.
Everyone in the conference. I mean, I don't think there's anyone there that was thinking in terms of we're just going to make a kilometre of decent quality network and then leave it at that.
You know, that's kind of what they've done a little bit with the cycle superhighway on Stratford High Street, haven't they? They've got Stratford High Street, it's got this bit that, you know, then just stops.
Yeah, but on the other side, I have the feeling that's a scheme that was kind of before Gilligan. One of the things that Gilligan said that he seemed quite proud of was the CS5 announcement, that there is going to be a segregated lane all the way from Pimlico to Oval, right the way through Vauxhall Cross, which he described as the most dangerous junction in London for cyclists. So, I mean, that's not a short scheme.
It's good that, I mean, on the one hand, he's saying if we're not doing it properly, we're not going to do it at all. But then on the other hand, he's saying, you know, be realistic about what you can get. I mean, basically, he's just saying, this is what I've managed to devise. This is the only option in town in this electoral cycle. It's the end.
I don't think Gilligan is saying it's my way or the highway. He's saying, look, this is what we've got. I think it's pretty good. I'd like some input, constructive input, not just people accusing me of having blood on my hands, which isn't really helpful. But I need some input. We need to agree something and get it in there, and not just, you know, squabble amongst ourselves.
It isn't part of the problem that it's very easy for politicians to regard cyclists as a monolithic block in terms of interest group representation, whereas if you look at environmentalists, you would say, well, look, yeah, you've got the people who climb up the cooling towers of the power station and lower themselves in and try and shut things down, the kind of Earth First sort of Greenpeace end of things, and then you've got a spectrum that goes right through to people having a bring and buy sale to save the tiger or whatever in the village hall, and they don't lump them all together. Whereas just because there's a bunch of cyclists who do a die-in somewhere outside Transport for London or in King's Cross when there's been a casualty, they go, oh, these blooming cyclists, they're so ungrateful. Do they not understand that there is a spectrum? And actually that's a good thing in terms of making ourselves understood to people, to have a kind of spiky end and to have a sort of fluffy end. And it doesn't have to be all, it's not all masterminded by Ashok Sinha in the London Cycling Campaign. Is he failing to see the fact that we're a heterogeneous bunch?
I don't think he's failing to see that. I just think he's at the stage where we're at the sharp end of, yes, we are going to make big changes. And as he said before, it is going to involve taking road space away from some road users who are not going to be happy. Right, there will be pushback. And that means that when that pushback happens, we as a group are going to need to actually get on board and push back against the pushbackers, if you see what I mean. If that's not, and not isolate ourselves in the wilderness, it's like, if it's not perfect, I'm not supporting it.
Well, that is the big problem, isn't it? It's difficult to be, on the one hand, kind of ideologically pure in terms of what you would do if you were in charge as the benign dictator, and actually then also put your shoulder to the wheel in terms of making things incrementally better.
You know,
that's a question that I did ask actually to David Hembro, and I don't think he really provided a convincing answer. I mean, he provided a convincing answer on pretty much every other question that I asked him about cycle infrastructure, but on that one question of how do you make progress given where we are in Britain today?
I mean, the question is,
really,
how good
to say
is good enough? You know, because we want something that's, we all want the perfect road, right? My idea of the perfect road, I don't know about yours, is somewhere, could be Italy, preferably France, not too steep.
Well, mine's just over there.
Well,
Waterloo Bridge,
I mean, going north maybe, going south definitely not. But the perfect road is, you know, somewhere in the south of France, the sun's out, it's about 30 degrees, sun is not overhead, could be, you know, 10 o'clock in the morning, could be 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Nice, smooth road surface. A light wind, preferably on one side, not on my back, but just on one side, just cooling me down. No cars. And somewhere up a hill, a cafe with a receptive waiter and a bottle of very, very cold rosé. Right, that's my idea of the perfect road. But, you know, you just don't get those in London. As John Dale said, within budget and within the electoral cycle, because I mean that's what happened in Sevilla. They built 1,000 kilometres of bike lanes. Some of it was not the best, but it's there. And when you see the pictures of the Sevilla stuff, some of it looked a bit, you know, not ideal, but none of it looked bad. I mean, all of the pictures from Sevilla that we saw looked much better than most of what we got here. At least as good as the Royal College Street stuff. And the Royal College, you know, the Royal College Street scheme could work for the whole of London because it's so much cheaper than what was there before. For £50,000, they remodeled that. The initial the tracks there cost £500,000. You know, so all right, Royal College Street is not perfect. You know, it's not wide enough, and you know, it's got planters, and the planters move around, and yada yada yada. Klaus Bondam said, "Oh, but those armadillos are really dangerous to cyclists." I don't know what he meant by that, but anyway, it went in for 50,000, and you can always take it out and do something else. So, you know, we just got to figure out something that works and get it in there. You know, the time for talking has stopped. I mean, that's what I agree with. You know, the skeptics, the time for talking has stopped. We do need consultation, we do need thought, you know, and the LCDS, I think it's the London, what is it? The London Design Standards. That's great that people have spent the time to do that, but we do need to kind of get on and stop being hypercritical and just go with, you know, this is the best that we can do at this time.
Within the electoral cycle, that is a very important and pressing time frame. The time frame that I'm more concerned about right now is the happy hour.
You all need to get some
And
more
I think
beer.
We ought to get some more beers beer in. And I will thank Bill Chidley and Kieran Yates for attending on behalf of the bike show, the Hackney Cycling Conference.
Yeah, it was our pleasure. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was so much better than last year. It was... Thanks, Hackney. I love you, Hackney.
Yeah, a great, enjoyable event, and inspiring was the word I was thinking of.
Well done for making it to the end of this extended edition of The Bike Show. I hope you didn't find it too much of a bike advocacy geek out. Anyway, there'll be more coming on the podcast in the next few days. Not bike advocacy geek outs, but other stuff. So stay tuned for that. Until then, goodbye.